Purim Torah this week, Mirtz Hashem. Got to start getting ourselves ready for Purim. So today we're going to learn some Purim Torah from the Divrei Shmuel of Slanim. Who is the Divrei Shmuel of Slanim? So you see here, I pulled up for us to look at together the Wikipedia page of the Slanim Hasidic dynasty. Okay, the Divrei Shmuel of Slanim was the second Slanim Rebbe. He was born in the year Tafresh Yud, which is 1850. And you could see, if you see just like, you know, just to put us on the chart in terms of the history of Hasidus, you could see the Baal Shem Tov, the Magid of Mezrich, Rav Aaron Agadol of Karlin, Rav Shlomo of Karlin, Rav Mordechai of Lechovich, Rav Noach of Lechovich, Rav Moshe of Kabrin, and then the first Slanim Rebbe, Rav Avram of Slanim, was known as the Yesod HaAvoda. And when he passed away in 1883 in Tafresh Mem Dalet, his grandson, the Divrei Shmuel, Rav Shmuel Weinberg, took over. Okay, and you can see the dates of his life right over here. He lived from 1850 till 1916. He died during World War I, and he was buried in the Jewish cemetery in Warsaw, I believe. So, anyways, his Torah is very, very sweet, and very beautiful. And we were learning, you know, we were learning a little in the Sivas Shalom. That was one of the more recent Slanim Rebbe's. And since today is the Artzeit of the Divrei Shmuel, and I said we're going to start some Purim Torah this week, so I figured, why not? L'chavad the Artzeit. Let's learn his Torah. It's beautiful Torah. Okay, so I sent you. Yeah, Leah.
I think I was actually at his gravesite in
really?
Warsaw.
Really? Oh, wow. I went there. Wow, wow, wow. Okay. All right, so that'll make this even more special for you. Wow, okay. Yeah, he was a very special tzaddik. A very, very special tzaddik. He was the grandson of the first Slanim Rebbe. The first Slanim Rebbe had one son, and then when he passed away, his grandson took over. There's amazing in the introduction to the Sefer, there's beautiful biographical information about him, about his ability to really connect to people in a deep way. Anyways, his Torah is very sweet, and not enough people learn it, so we're going to learn it. We're going to learn it, especially on his Yahrzeit. You know what I like to think about? Like, how many people in the world do you think right now are learning the Divrei Shmuel of Slanim on his Yahrzeit? Give me, like, a high number. You think 1,000 people are learning his Torah today? Meaning, how many people on planet Earth today are conscientiously learning the Torah of Rav Shmuel of Slanim, Rav Shmuel Weinberg, because it's his Yahrzeit? 1,000? You think that number's high or low? Maybe in the Slanim-based Medrash they learn. I don't know. Right, 1,000. Maybe we're one of 100 people. I don't know. Let's say even 10,000 people. You think 10,000? Probably not. 10,000 people learning the Sefer today? Probably not. So we're in a unique group today. Okay, let's start with something from the end of Parshas Beshalach, which is really our introduction to Purim, because that's when Klal Yisrael begin their first battle with Amalek. Okay, and we know the Torah describes. Okay, everyone can see on the page over here. V'haya ka'asher yarim Moshe yado v'gavar Yisrael. V'ka'asher yaniach yado v'gavar Amalek. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu is standing with his hands outstretched as we fight against Amalek. And when Moshe's hands were raised, the Jews are winning. When Moshe's hands are lowered, the Jews are losing. And of course, the Mishnah Meseches Rosh Hashanah says what? Do the hands of Moshe win wars or lose wars? No. When the Jews look up to Avinu Shevashamayim, so we're victorious. And God forbid when we look down and we put too much trust in our own hands, so then unfortunately we lose. Okay, so Moshe's hands are just indicative of the Emunah and the spiritual state of the Jews. But explains the Divrei Shmuel of Slanim, Yadayim Roim Zos Al Maisim. Hands obviously correspond to what? To one's actions. What does it mean that my hands should be raised upwards? And why is that the key to defeating Amalek? Im Yehudi Meirim Es Maisav Lamala Meirosho. If a person lifts his hands, it's very fascinating. Of all the parts of our body, the hands have this unique ability to be placed down low, to be lifted up high. I can't do that with my eyes. I mean, I can look down or I can look up. But the ability to lower and to raise hands, literally above the head or even below the waist, reaching down towards my feet, it's a remarkable thing. So hands represent action. Hands are, right? Yadayim askanios hain, Chazal say. The hands are busy. The hands represent one's actions in this world. Person has to be careful not to say, koichi v'oitzim yadi. Person has to be careful not to say, my strength and the effort of my hands made me successful. So hands represent action. So if a Jew lifts his hands above his head, what does that mean? Ratzalomar, shemaisav merubin mechachmaso. that a person doesn't become a theoretical Jew. It's one of the biggest fears that I have in my own life, of being a theoretical Jew. Theoretical Jew means a guy who knows a bunch of ideas but doesn't actually do anything. A person who talks about the right things but doesn't actually live it. So if a person's hands are above their head, when Moshe has his hands lifted above his head, in other words, that my actions go beyond my knowledge, I do more than I know, I'm not just a philosopher in a theoretical sense, but I live the Torah that I learn. Shemaisa merubin mechachmaso, then v'gavar Yisrael. That's how you defeat Amalek. Aval im chachmaso meruba mimaisa chas v'shalom, az v'gavar Amalek. But when a person gets into the world of ideas, and their actions are not in sync with their ideas, so then you enter into the world of Amalek. The truth is, however, the root of Amalek is really what happened in Gan Eden. The Nachash, in many ways, and we'll talk about it as I guess we get deeper into the Purim Shirim, the Nachash and Adam and Chava, that whole sugya is really the first encounter with Amalek. Because Amalek represents evil. And the first encounter with negativity and evil is the Nachash in Gan Eden. Right? Adam and Chava, maybe Mordechai and Esther, Adam and Chava. There's a lot to talk about there. Okay? Mamash a lot to talk about there. But the Nachash tries to what? The Nachash tries to battle Adam and Chava in the realm of ideas. It was very simple what they were told to do and not to do. Don't eat from this tree. Keep your hands off the tree. Right? And the Nachash with his creative svaros tried to convince Adam and Chava why it was okay to eat from the tree, why it made sense to eat from the tree. So that was an example where one's chachma, where one's understanding of things, or perceived understanding of things, right, caused the person to not practice, to not do. Hashem said very simple what they were supposed to do. So that world of Amalek, the bilbul of Amalek, the confusion of Amalek, right, is when Amalek comes and it causes a person, again, to get caught in his head, as opposed to just living with a certain pashas of doing what Hashem wants us to do. And therefore, it says the Devei Shmuel, V'idei Moshe Kvedim, the hands of Moshe grew heavy, V'yihi Yaldav Emuna. Amazing expression. That Moshe's hands were Amuna. What does Rashi say? Rashi says at the end of the parsha, on this pasuk, V'yihi Yaldav Emuna. Read your Rashi. Maybe some of you saw it over Shabbos. If not, you'll hear it now. V'yihi Yaldav Emuna. Rashi says, "V'yihi Moshe yodav be'emuna prusos hashamayim b'tfila ne'emana unachona." Moshe's hands were stretched out in emuna means that Moshe's hands were spread heavenward in a state of steady tfila, right? Tfila ne'emana, faithful tfila, steady tfila, nechoina, proper prayer, right? Why were Moshe's hands getting heavy? Rashi says, "V'idei Moshe kvedim b'shvil shenis atzel b'mitzvah u'mina acher tachtav," because Moshe Rabbeinu was told to go fight Amalek, and he sent Yoshua in his place. And there's a lot of good reasons for that. We could defend Moshe in a very strong way, but the bottom line is that Moshe had an opportunity to do something and he didn't do it, so his hands became heavy. He didn't use his hands in the right way. So then Moshe has to what? Moshe has to somehow find a way to lift up his hands once again, this time in prayer. What's the idea of Moshe's hands being emuna? Peresh, Moshe haya bechinas das shel klal Yisrael. Yes, Moshe Rabbeinu is a great doer of mitzvos, and again, there's many mamari chazal to make that point. But Moshe, in the Svarim HaKadoshim, is also known as the das of klal Yisrael. Moshe is, so to speak, the mind of the Jewish people. Moshe is the one who learns the Torah and transmits the Torah to klal Yisrael. V'lachein kasha hayolo laharim es yadav. It's hard for Moshe, because Moshe is a teacher of Torah, right? That Moshe spends a lot of time in the Beis Medrash. Moshe's world is the world of Torah ideas. Again, I'm not saying that Moshe doesn't do mitzvahs, God forbid. In fact, Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who the Gemara in Makos says is obsessed with mitzvahs. Oev kesef lo yispa kesef. If you love money, you're never satisfied with money. The Gemara says that's a reference to Moshe, who's never satisfied with mitzvahs. Moshe's begging Hashem to go into Eretz Yisrael so we could do more mitzvahs in Eretz Yisrael. But because Moshe, on a certain level, is the mind of Klal Yisrael, it's hard for him to use his hands, Hainu b'chinas ha-maisim l'mal mishor ha-shadas, because Moshe represents the mind of Klal Yisrael, it's hard for him to bring his hands above his head. It's interesting. Right? It's very interesting. When a Kohen raises their hand, the siyas kapayim, there's a lot to think about here. Right? This whole notion of raising one's hands, the idea of the mind and the hands and lifting the hands above the head, or the inability, the struggle to lift one's hands above one's head that Moshe is experiencing here. So because Moshe is Das, it's hard for Moshe to raise his hands above his head. And therefore Moshe's hands become kvedim, they become heavy. Achein mepnei sheyada shel kol kocho shel Amalek hu al yedei rifyon yadayim. But since we know that Amalek does exactly that, it tries to what? To weaken our yadayim, right? It tries to give us, so to speak, yadayim yedei Esav, the wrong type of hands. Or, like Chazal say, where did Amalek attack the Jewish people? Where does this whole encounter emerge from? A place called Refidim, which Chazal understand as Refidim, Rafu Yadehem. So Moshe Rabbeinu understands that weak hands, weak practice of Avodas Hashem, is going to what? Is going to be a stepping stone for Amalek to attack. Lefichach, therefore Moshe says, what do I have to do? Hey, Rivan b'chol kocho. Moshe digs deep, and with tremendous tefillah and faith, he finds a way to lift his hands. V'yihi yaldav emunah. Moshe transforms his hands into hands of tefillah, as a way of being able to what? To reawaken himself, to be able to lift his hands once again. But that world of Amalek is the world of what? Is the world of not being active in the failure to what? The failure to turn it into actions. Chaver, just think about where Amalek comes from. Who is Amalek? Who is Amalek? Who's the person Amalek? Who's the person Amalek?
He was the son of Eliphaz.
Okay.
And the daughter of Yishmael.
So he's an einikel of Esav, right? He comes from the world of Esav, right? He's the direct descendant of Esav. He's a grandson of Esav. Amalek is Esav. What do we know about Esav? What do we know about the end of Esav's story? You know what the end of Esav's story is? Is that his head is buried in Maras HaMachpelah. His head is in Maras HaMachpelah. Why is Esav's head in Maras HaMachpelah? Why not his hands? Why not his body? Because Esav was successful, so to speak, in his head. Right? And he spoke a good game. He knew how to talk the talk in a way that Yitzchak bought into it. But the Yadayim were Yadayim Yidei Esav. They were not the proper hands in the service of Hashem. His Yadayim were not. There was a disconnect between, so to speak, his head and his body. We're going to talk a lot more about that tomorrow. The neck being the bridge between the head and the body. But I'll just tell you one more point on this before we move on to the next piece. Amalek, look at the word Amalek. The Sfarim connect it to the concept of Malika. Who knows what Malika is? What is Malika? Who knows what Malika is? What is Malika? Nope.
You could look into the light. Yeah.
Next, what's Malika?
Isn't it licking?
Lack is lashon of licking, and Chazal talk about Amalek licking our blood.
Take the nail in the back of the neck.
That's right. Malika is one of the ways, right, that in shechting a bird, right, the Kohen with his sharp thumb takes his thumbnail and he severs the bird's neck. Malika, right? Malika is using yadayim, fascinating, right? Not even a knife. Using your mamish your yadayim to what? To break the head from the body. Very interesting. So Amalek is Malika. Malika, again, is the cutting of the neck, is the separating of the head and the body. That's what Amalek is. That's what Esav is. Esav is, his head is in Maras HaMachpelah, but not his body. So Chevra says the Divrei Shmuel, the way that we defeat, the way that we fight against Amalek is to what? Is to make sure our hands are strong. And strong hands mean lifting our hands above our head. Which means that when we learn about Shalash Shudas, we have Shalash Shudas. We have Shalash Shudas. I fell asleep this Shabbos in the afternoon, and I almost got into a bad situation. I almost missed Shalash. I never miss Shalash Shudas. I have Shalash Shudas every week, but I feel like there was a Yetzirah for me to have a Nisayon with Shalash Shudas because I've been being mechazik others to work on having Shalash Shudas each week. So the Yetzirah tried to get me to, oh, you talk about Shalash Shudas, but you yourself don't do Shalash Shudas. So I had to jump up to wake myself up in time to quickly chop a Shalash Shudas. And Baruch Hashem, I pulled it off. It worked out okay. Right? But there's a danger of what? Of being a head and not being Yadayim. And that's part of the fight against Amalek, the Rifyon Yadayim that Amalek tries to cause. Okay? What else can we learn from this expression, V'yihi yadav emuna ad bo ha-shemesh? The Pasuk says that Moshe's hands were lifted in prayer faithfully ad bo ha-shemesh until the sun set. which Rashi explains that a Malik had an ability to calculate certain things based on astrology. So Moshe Rabbeinu held the sun in place in order to be able to be victorious over a Malik. Again, there's so much in each of these words. But explains the Divrei Shmuel. What is this idea of Yodav Emuna? Mi sheyesh bo Emuna Amitis, Nasis Emunoso etzlo kiyad mamish. The goal, chevra, is that my Emuna should be so real that I can hold it in my hands. Emuna is not some type of floaty idea. You know, the mistake that people make about Emuna is that we fail to understand the proper, simple translation of Emuna and Bitachon. And I love to emphasize this because it's so important. It's so simple when you get it down. But it's so fundamental. What is Emuna and what is Bitachon? The Chazon Ish wrote a sefer on the topics of Emuna, Bitachon, Va'od, and other topics. But the first two sections are on Emuna and Bitachon. What is Emuna? What is Bitachon? Emuna is faith. Bitachon is trust. However, what's the difference? We sometimes use the words, you know, irresponsibly. We just use them almost interchangeably. But what is the difference, Shai, between Emuna and Bitachon? What is the difference between Emuna and Bitachon? Emuna is what? Is my theoretical belief that there is a God. I believe there's a God, Emuna. Anima Amin, Be'emuna Shlema, I believe that the Borei Olam exists. What is Bitachon? What is trust? Bitachon means I actually do something with it. Bitachon means I actually rely on it, right? Bitchu ba'Hashem, I rely on Hashem, ade ad, like the Pasuk says, right? I'm willing to take risks because I'm so confident that Hashem's got my back. Right? I'm willing to put myself in a situation that I know Hashem is going to provide. It's one thing to believe theoretically, yeah, I believe in God. When everything's good, yeah, I believe in God. I believe in the idea of God. Bitachon means to lean on Hashem, to trust in Hashem, right? To seek shelter in Hashem. That when I could, right? Al tivtichu bin divim, like we say in Hallel, don't rely on, I don't know, my boss, because he's not the one who's really responsible for my parnasa, right? Rely on Hashem. That means when I have two jobs in front of me, one job that's going to be a better work environment for my Yiddishkeit, but pays a little bit less, and one job that's much worse for my spirituality, but pays a little bit more, I have the bitachon, not the theoretical, the mamish bitachon, that I take the job that I know is better for my soul, even though it makes less money. That's bitachon. That says, not only do I theoretically believe that God is responsible for my financial success, I'm Amish. Know it as a fact. I'm willing to live it. So Yodav Emuna explains the Divrei Shmuel. The goal is that what? My Emuna should be so real that a person has Emuna in their hands. That it should be atzlo kiyad mamish. Emuna is something so tangible, so real, that I can actually do something with it. Kederech sha'adam misugo lifol biyadav kirtzono. Just like a person can do with their hands as they see fit. I can move my hands. I can perform actions with my hands. Kach poel hu be'emunaso. A person whose emuna is real can do things with their emuna. Can actually make things happen with their emuna. V'zeh ha'yekocho ha'kadosh ha'maran sa'bekedisho me'lechevich. We learned a few moments ago that Slonim comes from where? From Kobrin, from Lechevich. The Rebbe of Lechevich. The Saba Kedisha, the first Rebbe of Lechevich, was an unbelievable miracle worker. How did he do miracles? You know how? Shepol Yeshua's Bekerav Ha'aretz. He did all sorts of wondrous things. You know why? Ki haya gvoa ma'od b'madrega zu shel emuna. Because he had a very, very lofty level of emuna. And when a person has real emuna, they can mamish make things happen. Their emuna is in their hands. That's the difference between a person whose emuna is just in their mind or in their heart, and a person whose mamish, their emuna, is tangible, that they can mamish hold it in their hands. Okay, and that's the goal that we're trying to get to, and that's part of, again, how we defeat Amalek by reaching such a madrega of emuna. Okay, that's our introduction to fighting Amalek. Let's go now to some of his teachings from Parsha Zachor and Purim. Okay, so just take a look, continuation of the next page. Parsha Zachor. Parsha Zachor this year coincides, I think, with Parsha Struma. And I want to be machazek us in this point, because I think it's so real, and I think it's something that a lot of people will admit that it's true, and the question is, do we want to do something about it? Chazal make a link between two zachors, two very important zachors. Zachor es asher asal l'cha Amalek, remember that which Amalek tried to do to you, And Zachar is Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho. And remember, Zachor is Yom HaShabbos. Sanctify the Shabbos. Right? There's a strong connection between them. Ha Baha Talia. This one and that one are Talia, are dependent upon one another. My relationship with the feeding of Malik is going to be connected to my relationship with Shabbos Kodesh. Chevy, you with me? Michael Froelich, you with me? Jack, you got it? You hear? Amalek and Shabbos, they mamish go hand in hand. What's the pshat? V'kvar amar hachacham, kol tenua molida chom, v'chol chai mitnoeah. Any movement creates heat. When you're exercising, your body starts to warm up. V'chol chai, and the more something is alive, the more movement it has. A rock is not so alive and doesn't move very much. A plant is a little bit more alive, and therefore it moves a little bit more. An animal is more alive and moves a little more. A human being is supposed to move the most. We're supposed to have the ability to move the most. Perish, shekol davar sheyesh bo yoyser chiyus, yoyser chayus, mitnoeya yoyser. The more something is alive, right, the more it expresses being alive by being able to move. Kemo sheroim ki adomim ein bo shum tenua, like we see a rock doesn't move at all. Hatzomeach, a plant, moves a little bit more. An animal, a little bit more. A human being, a little bit more. V'kach gam ha'oved es Hashem yisbarach. Chevra, if your Torah life is alive, if you really believe kihem chayenu v'orech yameinu, if a person is living the words v'chay bahem, to live Torah, to really live Torah, that means you have to be active in Torah. You have to be moving. Okay? V'kach gam ha'oved es Hashem yisbarach. B'chol yimos ha'shua alav la'amol kasha. Ad shi'is ora levavo la'avodasi yisbarach. A person needs to what? Needs to be moving. Now, what's interesting is that Shabbos, which is our holiest day, we seem to move less. Right? In terms of actual movement, we move less. The Torah even says that a person doesn't go out of his house on Shabbos. Al yetzei ish mevakomo biyom haShabbos, right? We have laws of Erevin. We have laws of Tchumen. We don't go outside to gather the mon on Shabbos. So it's very interesting. All week, we're very active. So what happens on Shabbos? Let's try to understand. V'ilu b'Shabbos Kodesh, sheyesh bo neshama yaseira, v'hu yoser chai. Shabbos, you're not just alive like you are on a Tuesday. Shabbos, you're alive in a different way. Why? Because you got a neshama yaseira. If you have a neshama yaseira, that means what? You're even more alive. You're even more human. You're superhuman, right? You're more alive on Shabbos. Your male chayus de kedusha, that has to be nikeres benafsho, that has to be identifiable upon a person, and there needs to be a tenua yaseira. In other words, on Shabbos, even though we're traveling less, I may go farther in my car during the week than I do what on Shabbos Kodesh, but on Shabbos there needs to be more movement. And if that movement is not on the outside, then that movement has to be taking place on the inside. There has to be more energy flowing, pulsating through a person on Shabbos. A tenua yaseira b'hargashas halev u'misrachvim libo. Again, if he's not going to be traveling in a more expansive way, his neshama, his heart, his connection to Torah and mitzvot, his davening, his excitement to be alive has to be so much more on Shabbos, right? Lelo yagia maruba. And that should happen almost automatically. The same way that it's easier for you to move than a rock because you're more alive. So on Shabbos, if you're really makabel Shabbos in the right way, so automatically, you should be much more alive on Shabbos. Now, look what he writes here. Achein kol zehu lemevakesh es Hashem b'avodaso hu yargish zos. But this is only true for a person what who understands that Shabbos is supposed to be the greatest, most alive day of the week. Aval ha'odom sheshakua b'ta'anugei gufo einenu margish b'chol zeh v'hu b'kriras gadola. But a person who's caught up in the pleasures of the body, he doesn't feel this, he doesn't perceive this, and in fact, he's much more alive during the week than he is on Shabbos. On Shabbos, the guy mamish sleeps away the whole Shabbos, right? On Shabbos, he's mamish cold. All week, he's on fire, and during Shabbos comes, all of a sudden, he's cold. Look what he says, and it's so true, and it's sad, but it's unfortunately so true. It happens to us, and we've certainly seen it by others as well. V'im ki yesh l'chol ha'anashim r'sichos ha'dam b'inyanehem. If a person is mamish, his blood is literally boiling when it comes to his matters. So during the week, Right? He's so active. He's involved with this and he's involved with that. And when his boss calls him and says, listen, I need you to stay late at work. We're working on a big project. No problem. The guy's up till 2 in the morning. He's got all the energy in the world. Right? And he's energized to do what he needs to do or the things that he wants to do. When it comes to his things, he finds all this amazing strength, this amazing drive, this amazing energy. All of a sudden, Shabbos comes. Hinei bevoam l'tfila. A Jew comes to shul Friday night. U'lavodas Hashem, heim b'lishum tenua. And the guy's mamish falling asleep. The guy comes to shul Shabbos morning. The rabbi's giving a drasha. He can't keep his eyes open. The same guy who never for a second falls asleep at 11 o'clock in the morning, when he's sitting at his office, right, when he's checking his stocks, when he's watching a ball game, all of a sudden Shabbos comes and this guy is exhausted. He's got no energy. Says the Divrei Shmuel, because since he expended all of his energy on unholy things, or let's just call them lesser things, less important things, so when he comes now to holy things, he's out. He's out of energy. He's got nothing left. And chaver, that's called a malik. That's called a malik. When I use up all of my energy on lesser things, and when it comes to avodas Hashem, I'm mamish cold. Again, what did we say? Tnuah is molida chom. Movement creates heat. The world of a malik is the world of what? On a nice snowy day, krirus, coldness. Coldness means lack of movement. A person who's what? Who's so chill that he's frozen. Yeah, he's such a chiller. He doesn't move at all. He just sits around all day. Asher karcha baderech. The world of Amalek is asher karcha baderech. Amalek causes life to become what? To become very bland, very cold, very regular. Shuhu mashkia asachayis b'tanugim asurim. Amalek tries to deceive us. Amalek tries to get us to eat from the forbidden fruit, going back to that Gan Eden imagery. U'memeila ein bo shum chayis l'davar shevekedusha. To the point that we have nothing left for holiness, and therefore we're left cold without movement. If movement is warmth, krirus, coldness, is lack of movement. And therefore, friends, let's end the piece, and then I'll take your questions or comments. Therefore, says the Torah, and say Chazal, there's a link between what? Zachor eis asher asa lecha Amalek. When you remember to destroy Amalek, timcha zecha Amalek. When you remove that world of Amalek from your life, that coldness, tis or b'cha chayos mechadash, v'tizka lizkor as yom Shabbos l'kadsho. Then your Shabbos will be what Shabbos is supposed to be. For people who really understand Shabbos, it's the day of the week that's most alive. It's the day of the week that a person stays up late learning Torah, or a person brings much more energy to their davening, right? More energy to their avodas Hashem. And unfortunately for other people, Shabbos is the day where I used up all my energy during the week, and I need to rest, I need to relax on Shabbos. I can't work hard on Shabbos. Shabbos is mamish a day of work. The Svar HaKadosh explained. You don't do malacha on Shabbos because you do malacha on Shabbos. You understand? You're not allowed to do the 39 forbidden labors on Shabbos because we need to save all of our energy for the work of Shabbos. By tzaddikim, it's a big avodah Shabbos, right? The avodah of Shabbos Kodesh. But if a person uses up all their energy on a malik, so then they're left cold for Shabbos. And again, unfortunately, you see that sometimes. You see a person who during the week is mamish, you know, you want to talk to them about what's happening in their business practices. They're mamish, you see, they're alive. And then Shabbos Kodesh, you want to come over Shabbos afternoon and learn a little? Nah, I got a nap for like 6 hours. I can't, I don't have any energy left. Right, so where does that come from? So that's a malik. That's a bechina of a malik. Okay, Yehuda, what do you want to say?
I just wanted to give two examples from nature of what we're talking about.
Okay.
The first one is fire from friction, where the whole week you're like rubbing and you're making this friction and heating up the materials you're using.
Okay.
And then once Shabbos comes and you get this neshama yisera and like the spark finally kindles the wood, you don't need to do anything else for the wood to be ablaze.
Okay, very good. Very good.
That was the first one. And the second one is the idea of potential and kinetic energy. That potential energy is you're building up the energy, right? Like if you have a spring and you compress it and you compress it and you compress it, the whole time that you're compressing it, you're giving it the ability to like push something when it expands.
Right.
And so what a malik is trying to do is trying to have you throughout the week use up that energy on other things, so that once Shabbos comes, the energy isn't there anymore. But if you have it up and your spring is still compressed, then when Shabbos comes, it's able to expand, do whatever it needs to do.
Beautiful, beautiful. Listen, Chavra, it's not by chance that we start Shabbos with and Shabbos with fire, you understand, right? We start with Neiros Shabbos, we end with Havdalah. Right? Mamish, that's the Eish, that's the response to the Kriros of Amalek. Yes, Rabbi Ashi, what do you want to say?
He mentioned the line, Ol Chai Misnoea.
Yeah.
So in the back of the Sefer, in the Kutei, on Os Kaf Beis, he says, Kol Chai Misnoea. Kol Yesh Bukhis, Yesh Lakoch, Azuz Nim Koma. Rak Mishu Bukhinas Dom, Miyachol Azuz Nim Koma. So just to, especially also for Shovavim, that as long as you're alive, you can change. You can be different, You can move.
Very good. I don't know how you knew that was there, but very good. Very, very good. Yeah, very good. Okay, so this is what it means to be alive. We got to wake ourselves up. Mamash got to wake ourselves up. It's hard on a cold, snowy day to wake ourselves up. Okay, one more little piece on Zachar. It says that Amalek came with the intention, Asher Karcha Baderech. Again, Chazalev, excuse me, different interpretations on Asher Karcha. They say Karcha is a Lashon of Kar, of coldness. It's a Lashon of Mikra, chance, happenstance, right? Lack of amuna, the opposite of yadayim of amuna. It's also a lashon of keri, right? Of tumas keri, a bal keri, a tuma. So it has a lot of different connotations. But says the Divrei Shmuel, very sweet, very short and sweet. He says, asher karcha baderech. What does that mean, asher karcha baderech? It means that they encountered us on the way, right? Meaning we were coming out of Mitzrayim, and Amalek tried to stop us on our way to Har Sinai. Explains the Divrei Shmuel. Now we'll learn a little Yiddish, okay? Anyone here speak Yiddish? Anyone speak a little bit of Yiddish? Jack, you do a little Yiddish over there? Okay, look what he says here. Perish, dikriris is shoin geverin aderech. Who can figure it out? By Amalek, kriris, coldness, is shoin geverin, is already geverin, like given to aderech. Meaning what? By Amalek, what does it mean to have a derech, right? You talk about a derech. A person talks about a derech halimud, a derech in avodas Hashem. A derech means a thought out path, right? A derech means, you know, this is, he's on the derech, he's off the derech, right? A derech means something that is calculated. By a malek, asher karcha baderech. It's one thing to have days, you know, where like you're feeling a little uninspired. You're feeling a little cold. It's another thing to make that your mahalach hachaim, that your whole life has become, that mamash, you make a derech out of it, right? By a malik asher karcha baderech, that kriris is shoin gever in a derech, right? That it becomes a what? A mamash a derech, shuv ein ze mikra. It's no longer happenstance. It's not, oh yeah, I had a bad day. At a certain point, a person has to say, it's not a bad day. I've made this my life and I need to stop. It's not an accident anymore. Who kvar avra v'shana v'hurgal bakach? He's made it his norm, and therefore a person needs to get off of that derech. That's what the Navi says. Ya'azov rasha darko. Right, the rasha has to get off of his derech, because even a rasha could have a derech. You would think kriyus is not a derech. Kriyus is like, okay, it's an off day. You know, it was a bad choice. But at a certain point, if a person doesn't stop the downward spiral, so it becomes mamish a person's derech. And let's expand on that idea. We're going to see two more pieces. The second piece we're about to learn is going to perhaps elaborate on that. But first, let's get to the first Purim Torah, and then we'll do two more pieces. Okay? Two more Purim Torahs. We know, it says in the Megillah, in the second parak, when we finally meet Mordechai HaYehudi, it tells us about this amazing Jew, Ish Yehudi Hayu B'Shushan Abira. And what was his name? His name was Mordechai Ben Yair Ben Shimi Ben Kish. Chaver, this is a really important piece. Listen carefully. This is going to, Mordechai was the Gadol Hador in the generation, just think about this for a second, where Klal Yisrael almost was annihilated. Okay, so just process that for a second. Right? Mordechai Yehudi was the tzaddik, along with Esther, who saved Klal Yisrael from complete destruction. And he was the Gadol Hador of that generation. So that means it's very important to learn from Mordechai a derech, talk about, you know, the opposite of the derech of Amalek, to learn a derech and avodas Hashem from Mordechai. And the truth is, says the Slonim HaRebbe, the Divrei Shmuel, if you just pay attention to his name, you mamish get a derech and avodas Hashem. The tzaddikim talk about the fact that if you look at Mordechai's name, actually, look at the letters of Mordechai's name. What do you see? If you rearrange the letters, right, he's drachim. Mordechai is drachim, many paths. Mordechai's letters, you see? The letters of the word Mordechai is the same letters as Drachim. Mordechai helps us to find the many paths that we need to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, each in our own way. Okay, Mordechai helps us to find the Derech. Okay, so now, he's Mordechai ben Yair ben Shimi ben Kish. Let's go from the start, right? If Kish is his oldest ancestor that we know, so it's Kish, Shimi, Yair, Mordechai. Okay, that's the Derech. Let's see. Seder ha'avoda b'poel shel ish Yehudi. We want to get to Mordechai. Mordechai is the God of Ador, so we got to go slowly. Kish, Shimi, Yair, Mordechai. That's the Mahalach. From bottom up, right? That's how we grow in Avodas Hashem. Those are the steps in Avodas Hashem. Okay, listen to this, Chavar. It's beautiful. Betchila, and you all, this will resonate with every one of us because we've all experienced this, and we're all experiencing it right now. Betchila ben Kish. Step number one, you need to be a Ben Kish. What does Kish mean? Milashon Dveka. Kish means, Lahakish means like to knock. And the Gemara says that Mordechai is called Ben Kish because he was knocking on heaven's door. Yeah? Ben Kish means to knock. First you need to knock. What does it mean to knock? Ratzalomar, Yegia Buli Shum Hargashis Ha'ara, At Sheyazer Lo Hashem Yizbarach V'Yair Lo. In other words, you're standing at the gate, you're standing at the threshold, you want to enter into Avodas Hashem, and you're knocking on the door, and you're hoping, please, Hashem, open the door. I want to get inside. I don't want to be an outsider my whole life, right? And it's hard. That's hard. I traveled all this way. I was hoping, please, I want to be able to enter into the world of Avodas Hashem. I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful. And I'm knocking on the door. I'm knocking. I'm standing at the entrance. At least I showed up. I'm not inside yet, though. I'm not in. I'm not in the Beis Medrash yet. I'm not able to soak it up yet. But I'm trying. I'm banging on the door. I want to be an insider. And after I put in that effort to knock and to knock and to knock and to keep trying, again, I haven't had that breakthrough yet. Right? I'm sitting in front of the Gemara and I find it boring. But I'm trying to learn it. And I'm breaking my teeth on the words. And I'm knocking. I'm trying to get it to happen. Then, after Kish, Ben Shimi. Then all of a sudden I start to hear it. Ah. Hearing means what? Processing, understanding, Shema Yisrael. I start to absorb it. Shukvar zoche lishmoa. Now the words of the Torah are starting to penetrate. Like the Pasuk says, V'nasata la'avdecha lev shomea. Like it says at the beginning of Malachim Aleph. Right? They've given your servant a heart that hears. What do you mean a heart that hears? An ear that hears. No. A heart that hears means I'm starting to feel it. What happens next? Kish, Shimi, what happens next? Yair. Yair, illumination. Then the Torah starts to mamish what? Mamish starts to shine. You see a Jew, you mamish see a Jew who's been learning seriously. He comes out of the Beis Medrash, he has a glow on his face. You see someone, you know, who went to Eretz Yisrael for the year and they came back after a year of serious learning. They look different. They've got this Eretz Yisrael dika shine from immersing themselves in Torah. They become a Ben Yair. All sorts of beautiful illuminated colors radiating off of this person. And then, of course, you finally become what? After Kish, Shimi, Yair, now you become Mordechai. What is the Indian of Mordechai? V'kohu misala, a person elevates himself so much, at shezocha lebechinas Mordechai. What is Mordechai? Bechinas mira dachya. When it describes the spices of the Ketores, the Torah says you should take Bisamim Rosh, Shmos Perek Lamed. It says you should take Bisamim Rosh, the finest spices, the greatest spices. And what's the first spice that's listed? Mar Dror, which means pure myrrh. You know the spice myrrh? Mira Dachya. The Targum, the Unkelish translates Mar Dror as Mira Dachya, which Chazal see as a play on the word Mordechai, Mira Dachya. So Bisamim Rosh, the head of all spices, Mordechai, the best spice. Why spices? What's the Indian of spices? I mean, again, Bisamim Rosh means the best, you know, the most expensive, the best, the nicest. Okay, we can just leave it at that. We can just say that the point is that Mordechai represents, you know, becoming a Rosh, becoming a Gadol, becoming a leader. What do you got there, Leo? You got some temple spice. What do you got there?
It's Qatar from the Temple Institute in the Old City.
Ooh la la.
It has myrrh and everything, yeah.
I hope it doesn't have too much everything because there's a prohibition of making the Qataris.
Exactly, Rabbi. It's cool. They limit. They take one ingredient out of each one, okay, so you don't know which one you're going to get. But it's
Okay. Very cool. Wow. Okay. So that, but the first one on the list is myrrh. Is more dror, is pure spice, right? More, memresh. That's how it's written in the Torah. Mar dror. Dror means pure, and mar is myrrh. Is the spice myrrh? What's the gematria of the word mar? Memresh.
Two forty,
which is the same gematria as
Amalek.
That's right, because Mordechai, who's hinted to in the pure myrrh, right, is the one who's the antithesis to Amalek. Amalek attacks the Jews who are vayizonev b'cha, the Jews on the tail, the Jews who are trailing behind, and Mordechai represents the rosh. Mordechai represents the head, right? A proper head. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu, we said, is das. Okay, again, a lot there. But what's with spices? What's the Indian of spices? Hainu shezoicha l'chush ha-reyach ha-amiti. To be zocha to the true scent. What does that mean? Bechinas v'haricho b'yiras Hashem. Like the Navi Yeshaya says, v'haricho b'yiras, the scent of yiras Hashem. What is reyach? Why is smell so special? Because, Chavra, if you look back in Gan Eden, when Adam and Chava sinned with the Eitz Hadas, they saw the tree and were attracted to it. They touched the tree. They tasted the tree. They listened to the Nachash. 4 out of 5 senses were used, but which sense was not damaged by the Chet Eitz Hadas? Smell. That's why the Navi associates Mashiach with smell. That's why smell doesn't have really, it's not tangible, right? Even when the Gemara is looking for a source that you make a bracha on smelling something, the Gemara in Bracha says, what's the source? Bracha is daf mem gimel, if I'm not mistaken. Kol ha-neshama tahalol kahaluka. It's something that your neshama enjoys. That's why on Motzei Shabbos, when your neshama Yisera is going back, what do we engage? We engage our nose. We use the koach of smell. So smell represents a certain madrega, the highest madrega. So he outlines for us, Kish, Shimi, Yair, Mordechai. It's a derech and avodas Hashem. The derech, the first, keep working hard, keep knocking on the door, hope that Hashem will open the door for you. And then your zochet to start hearing it. And then your mamish start to shine until you become mamish a rosh, a person who enters that pure world of the holy scent of Yiras Hashem. Okay, last piece for today. Got time for one more piece. The pasuk says, Mordechai lo yichrav lo yishtachav, and Mordechai refused to bow down to Haman. And not only that, v'lo kam v'lo zom, imenu, Mordechai would not even stand up from it. He wouldn't get out of his seat from it. Mordechai showed tremendous opposition to Haman. Explains the Divrei Shmuel on the occasion of his yartzein. Hinei amru chazal, the Gemara tells us, Meseches Gittin, ein adam omir al Divrei Torah ela im ke nichshol behen. A person does not find success in Torah until they stumble in Torah. You're going to make some mistakes. You're going to read the Gemara wrong before you read it right. You're going to mess up a few times before you figure out how to do better. That's life. It's an important teaching. V'yesh anashim, however, there are some people, shem nichshulu b'mashehu, heim misorim miyad lahargish b'chomer matzavam. There are some people, when they mess up, they learn from it right away. When they're nichshul, when they stumble, even a small thing, they're awakened to recognize, wait a minute, that's a problem. I got to work on that. And they become mindful of it right away. But sometimes a person doesn't have that wake-up call until they hit rock bottom. Sometimes a person is slowly falling apart. They don't even realize it. They're not fully aware of what's happening to them. And it's only when they get into a really bad situation that all of a sudden they cry out to Hashem, Hashem, well, how did this happen to me? Right? Or they call up their Rebbe and they say, Rebbe, I know I haven't been in touch in a long time, but things are really falling apart. And I don't know how I got into this mess. It's only then that they have that awakening and they become mindful of to where they have reached. And it's a very low place. The generation that ended up on the verge of destruction was sliding down a slippery slope. Right? It was a generation that was slowly losing itself to the point that they went to the Suda of Achashverosh. And there's a big discussion, by the way, Chavra. Did the Jews eat kosher at that Suda? Did they get gourmet kosher meals delivered to Achashverosh's party? Were they eating not kosher? Next thing you know, they're bowing down to Haman. Right? Slowly, slowly, the Jewish people are falling apart. Afkilo haya avodah zara mamish, even if you want to say that bowing to Haman was just a sign of honor, it wasn't really avodah zara. But Klal Yisrael, we're not being omed b'nisayon. Right? They were slipping. Ad shenechtama aleim gezeira. To the point that what? The situation got so bad that if you just realize what the pasuk says, right? Laihudim ha'isa'ora v'simcha v'sason v'ikar. What is the Gemara darshan? Laihudim ha'isa'ora, ora zu, Torah. Right? Laihudim ha'isa'ora, simcha is what? Simcha, Yom Tov. Laihudim ha'isa'ora v'simcha sason, brismila. V'ikar, tefillin. The way the Sfas-Emes understands it is that they didn't have those things. It was only at the end of the Purim story that they started getting these things back. I don't know to what degree that means, but the Jews stopped giving themselves bris milah. They stopped putting on tefillin. They stopped celebrating Yom Tov. They didn't learn Torah. All these things were coming back. Like, who do I say? Ora zu Torah. All these things were starting to come back to them. Right? That means that they didn't have them for a period of time. How did that happen? How did they get to such a low level to the point that they're on the verge of being destroyed by Haman? It's unbelievable. And if not for the tefillos of Mordechai and Esther, maybe it would have happened. Kach darcho shel yetzahara. Chevra, be aware. This is the derech of the yetzahara. Shuba la'adam liftoso, pitoy basar pitoy. The yetzahara gets you to compromise a little here and a little there. And you start to slip. Achu choshev, hare lo ucho lishbor es yitzri lechlutin. Until a person starts to think, wow, I cannot, I've fallen so far behind, I can't defeat the yetzahara anymore. And I have to at least, you know, negotiate with him. Right? I have to at least give in to certain averos because, you know, otherwise, I don't know, I'm too much in his clutches. And the Yitzhar keeps tugging a little bit more until he takes everything away from you. To the point that you become a Yitzhar. You mamish become your Yitzhar. Aval Mordechai at tzaddik. Mordechai understood this process of what? Of things falling apart. And therefore, however, you have to be mindful. You have to try to be in that first category of Jews that when you start to slip, catch it. Catch it. If you miss shir one day, don't miss it 2 days. And certainly don't miss it 3 days. And don't wake up and then, I was going through something and I didn't come to shir for a month. Right? You have to catch it right away. It's okay, we all have off days. Again, but don't make a derech out of kriros. Don't make a mahalach. Don't make a path in life out of coldness. So Mordechai at tzaddik teaches us that what? Lo yichrav lo yishtachaveh. Mordechai, hard stop. I'm not, no way, nothing. Haman, you're getting nothing from me. I'm not bowing to you. Lo kam velo za. I don't move. I'm not moved by you, Haman. I don't move an inch. Hu lo neyus lamali ratzon asitra achar. He did not, neyus means to agree. He did not agree to fulfill the desires of the Yitzhara, afilu b'mashahu. I'm not giving in one bit. And I tore that line, mamish, from the start. Heichel min harega harishon, umitoch kach nishtal shel hanes v'notzer mizeh megillah shlema. And because Mordechai slammed on the brakes when everyone else was slowly falling apart, that's where we got this Yom Tov. That's where we got this Yeshua from. A Jew who said, no way. I'm slamming on the brakes. Yitzhara, we're not going down that path. The same thing we find by Yosef at Tzaddik. When Eishes Potiphar is trying to seduce him, there's a word in the Torah which represents what? A hard stop. Vayima ein. And he refused. Period. And I'll say it and I'll sing it. Vayima ein. Shalshelis, right? Ein. Right? Mordechai, Yosef says it to Eishes Potiphar. There's nothing to talk about here. You know, it's almost like, it's funny, I was just thinking now, the shalsheles, it almost sounds like what a little kid does, you know, like when someone's saying something and the little kid like doesn't want to hear and they want to like drown it out and they're like, nah, they just like keep making noise, right? So that's what the Vayimayin is. Vayimayin, Potiphar is saying, Yosef, look at me, I'm so attractive. Yosef, I see in the stars we're supposed to be together. And he's just drowning her out with, no, like, go away, no. The answer is no. Bishum ofen lo. The answer is no. V'zoya derech lechol Yehudi tamid. However, that's how a Jew has to be. That when the Yetzirah comes and starts negotiating, you have to realize it's a very, very slippery slope. Why do you think the Torah, he ends by saying, why do you think the Torah puts Lo sasur achrei levavchem v'achrei neichem next to each other? Achrei levavchem means minus, means heretical thoughts. Achrei neichem means arayos. What do they have to do with each other? What, because I looked at some images that are unholy for my soul, all of a sudden I'm going to become a koifer? And the answer is, maybe. I hope not. But odom shenichshol b'staklus ba'arayos, when a person, again, starts to be casual about certain types of averos, he starts to put heretical ideals in his mind. And therefore, miyad b'haschala yamu neged yitzro b'chol toikaf. A person needs to slam on the brakes in a strong way. Multimus arlas levavchem, to circumcise his heart. To be like the Mordechais of the world who say, no, 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 no. You don't negotiate with terrorists. Lo yichrav, lo yishtachave, lo kam v'lo zah. I'm not moving one inch. And a person who holds that line in a strong way is the person who, again, like we learned in the previous piece, will be able to mamish climb the ranks to very lofty places. Okay, so Chava, this is a good beginning of our battle against Amalek. Got a lot of work to do. But I'm happy we were able to honor Rav Shmuel of Slonim, Rav Shmuel Weinberg of Slonim on his yard site. And we should be zocha, like we learned in the first piece, we should be zocha to live these ideas. It's one thing to read them and to learn them, and they're nice, they're sweet, they're beautiful, but it's another thing to turn it into yadayim, to make it something real that we live with. Okay?